KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Celebrating 25 years as your host of the Garden Hotline. Here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, happy Mother's Day weekend and welcome. Thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. On Saturday mornings, we get together, and we have for over 25 years now, and have a round table discussion about what's impacting your backyard, what's going on in the front of your house, how about those side yard landscapes, specialty garden space, a taste of the tropics, houseplants, what is potting mix, how to improve your soil, shearing, pruning, removal of bugs, diseases, and using information to make good decisions. My thoughts and orchestrations hopefully will help you open or solidify your options, with the final judgment, of course, is going to be up to you. And this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you being here and inviting me over into your home or car, wherever you're listening from. And a very, very important player in this whole thing is Greg Harvey. He's back producing the show again. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline, as I said before, since 1994. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available at various locations. During the week and sometimes on weekends, I do landscapes consulting. If you'd like for me to come to your home and do a walk and talk, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage, there's an email address and a phone number where I can be reached. Today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Decided this morning to take a tour de home site. That means where Tracy and I live. A pair of doves have been nesting in our gutter for like a month now. We kept thinking, are they there to lay eggs or what's going on? But I think they should have hatched already. So I don't know what's going on with that pair of doves. But it's fun. As we go out our back door, we always look up and say hi to them and ask them how things going. They don't really usually say too much, except whoo, 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 whoo. And I'll save this too. Boy, the Zoysia lawn is really starting to show some emerald green. That's very nice. The 3 sugar maples, which are street trees around the corner of our house, are fully leafed out, and the foliage is almost mature size. The sedum, acri, and the yellow moneywort, some people call it yellow creeping Jenny, that I have planted between the sidewalk and street really looks good. Putting on a good show. The sweet alyssum that I've been growing for several years that self-seeds, the seeds came up about, they germinated about a month ago, and now they're already in flower. So some plants are just absolutely amazing. They're still they're still small, but that's okay. I mean, wow, tough stuff. Alley bed, purple coneflowers, they're really starting to bud. Yellow or lemon verbenas looking good, skyrocketing up. And then also as a carpet underneath those plants, I have the sedum acri as well. Small leaf boxwood has recovered from some winter burn. In my pots and containers and window boxes, my houseplant, Kaffir lily, it's been out for, I probably put it out a little bit too soon, but burnt some of the foliage, sunburnt it, but it's in full bloom with orangish flowers right now. The pansies are really loving this cool temperatures. The cannas, I mean, they're up and down and all around, but they're probably already a foot high. My elephant ears are not showing anything yet. The fragrance of the herbs is fantastic. 3 knockout roses, 1 showing color of the flowers, the red. And the other 2 are just really, all 3 of them have a huge amount of buds. So in another week or two, it's going to be fantastic. Underneath the Mugo pine, the hosta, the palace purple, coral bells, and the Japanese painted fern, striking. Also underneath that is more sedum and more of the yellow moneywort. Covering the ground. Amanda Villavine, which I got from Struckmeyer's, where I broadcast from a couple weeks ago. It's really starting to show some bright, bright red color. And the spring bulbs, they are finished. And the last ones to be blooming were the grape hyacinths. And I still do have some onions, flowering onions in flower. The boxwood and Leland cypress accent from the north side of the yard, or north-facing yard. looks good. So this has just been a fantastic year, and I just can't wait. Each day just kind of brings a little bit more excitement, and this, I hope this year keeps going for all the textures, forms, and colors to come. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
KMOX, keeping you up to date with frequent weather updates 24 hours a day on News Radio 1120 KMOX. This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. As I look out the window here in downtown, it is raining, so all the girls that are here for the race and run, man, they are going to have some great fun. But we have, I don't know how much we are above normal rainfall, but it seems like we have to be way above. I guess I should have taken the time to look. But I tell you, the landscapes and everything else, I've never seen a spring any more spectacular than this one has been this year. So let's go out to Wentzville and go into Matthew's yard. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Hey, thanks for spending your Saturday mornings with us. Always look forward to the show throughout the year.
Well, great. Well, thank you for having me on your show.
I've got a three redbud trees that I've planted. I planted them early April, last week of March. They've bloomed beautifully this year, and two of them are leafing out wonderfully. My third has two branches that did not have any flowers or leaves on them. And my question is if that could be part of the transplant, or are those branches lost? One of them is fairly large and part of the structure of the tree.
Well, I'll tell you what, you can go out and I don't know if it's raining in Wentzville, or just go out whenever you can or feel like it. Take your thumbnail and scratch the branches or trunks or whatever that have not leafed out or did not have any flowers. And just below the bark, it should be green and kind of shiny looking if it's still viable and good. If it's dull, then that branch or trunk or whatever it happens to be is dead, and you might as well just cut it out.
Just cut it out at the base.
Right. Don't leave any don't leave any kind of stub, about a quarter inch stub wherever, it's intersected with, because a lot of people leave stubs, and sometimes that could be more problematic. So just, make it so what you're doing by only leaving a quarter inch is exposing the cambium layer, and that's what causes the scabbing, the healing of the wound, basically, from the pruning.
Fantastic, Mike. I really appreciate it, and I agree with you. The spring has been spectacular.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
And now, Mike, let's talk to Gary in South County.
Great. Hi, Gary.
How you doing?
Very good.
A couple things. You were saying last week that you were going to fertilize your zoysia, and I wanted to know what type of fertilizer you put on it. And, Brand, do you use the urea on it, or do you use something else?
Basically, I rotate. And this year, I've decided to use Scott's Liquifeed. So it's, I have the more or less the applicator, which you screw into the hose, and then you have these bottles of liquid fertilizer, and then I screw the bottles into that. So that's what I'm using this year.
Okay, then can I also trim my holly bushes at this time?
To be honest with you, start pruning them now. They've probably already flowered, or the flower buds are there, and means
they're
in flower. If you
they're done.
Okay, so when they're finished flowering, what's happening now is they're setting the fruits or the berries. So if you prune them, then you're not going to have any berries on your holly.
Gotcha. Something you can't see, and then you react, and next year you say, hey, what happened?
Right, exactly. You'll say, you usually get so many great berries, and now I don't have any. Well, that's because you pruned kind of in the wrong sequence.
I've been looking for ceramic concrete or ceramic flower pots for my front porch, 14 inches tall and 12 inches across in red, and I am having a very difficult time in finding them. I find a lot of selections in blue.
Right.
But I don't find any red, and I just don't know where to go. And I thought maybe somebody on your radio station or you might be able to direct me to a place that would have a 14-inch ceramic pot that's opening of about 14 inches and 14 inches tall.
You could certainly, you know, anticipate that happening that way, but also you could check online.
Okay.
And that way, I mean, you'd have to pay for the shipping and everything, but there may be, you know, local companies that have them.
Okay. Can you paint one of those clay pots and expect it to kind of hold the color?
No.
Okay.
It just gets sucked right into it, and it'll basically disappear and look sort of weird.
I thought maybe if I sealed it first and then tried it, it might work.
Yeah, you know, you might. You know, maybe with some of those, you know, a spray paint as opposed to a brush paint.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your show. I live for it every week.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep.
All right, Mike. And next, let's go to Don out in Chesterfield.
Hi, Don.
Hi, Mike. Got a question on my lilacs. They finished blooming. Is now the time to prune those back? And what's the best way to do that?
Basically, anything that flowers in the springtime that you don't anticipate having berries, like the gentleman was asking about, is holly. You don't prune those. But lilacs and forsythia and weigelias and spireas, all that stuff, you've got about any place between 1 and 2 months after they finish flowering to go ahead and prune them. And then pruning, you can just cut the individual flowers off if you don't want to drop the stems down that the flower clusters were growing on. So it's just a personal choice as far as how much pruning you want to do to them.
Okay, so I mean, do I just cut some of the branches back, or because they're getting pretty long?
Yeah, that's a personal choice as much as anything. So if you think they're getting too long, you could certainly cut some of them back. But you don't. It's not necessary to do as far as the overall health or anything. Now, once
but I have about 30 days.
Oh no, you got probably 1 or 2 months.
Okay.
And the reason why is because after that time, even though it's not obvious or noticeable to us, any spring flowering shrubs start setting the flower buds for, you know, the following year, which is kind of surprising. So, in other words, the buds are already set going into wintertime.
And I can trim back my burning bushes now. They're leafing out. I just cut those back, and those leaves will come out pretty good.
Yeah, they should be fine. I mean, all you're going to do is reduce the amount of red foliage you're going to have on them.
Right, right. But just make them a little tighter, I would say.
Right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Certainly.
And now, Mike, let's head to my hometown of Springfield, Illinois. We're going to talk to Jay.
Hey, Jay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Calling from Springfield. I apologize in advance if you've already answered this question. I have a maple tree, and it's fairly young, but the top, it's about 22 feet tall, and the top half of it is all dying.
Ooh.
And it's just not my tree. I've kind of walked around the neighborhood and looked at some of the other maple trees, and they're not as bad as mine, but they're doing the same thing. All the helicopter pods have fallen off. All the leaves are dying. Didn't know if I should. Is it too much water? Not enough water? What do you think?
It's surprising. I don't know of any disease or anything that's affecting maples directly. But if your whole neighborhood is showing the same signs, that's really kind of strange. So.
Well, we've had a lot of water. I do admit that, and it's about 5 or 10 feet from a pond. But I don't know if it'll come out of it, or is there some insecticide, or what I can do? I don't know anything about trees.
I would say leave it alone. It may leaf out, you know, maybe the leaves, you know, maybe there was some kind of cold snap or something, and the top of the tree is more exposed than the lower branches, and just a wind chill of one night could have just more or less knocked the foliage off. It should rebud, and if it doesn't rebud by, let's say, July or August, go ahead and you're going to have to prune off the stuff that doesn't have any foliage on it. But maples, beeches, and birch trees all prefer to be pruned during the summertime versus most of the other trees, which prefer to be pruned or cut back or whatever during the winter.
Okay. Well, that would be half of my tree.
Ooh.
So will it, if I prune everything away, it doesn't leave much, in a lower bush.
Right. So, I mean, like I said, leave it alone and see. It may relief out. It may, you know, there may have just been some weather-related, you know, circumstance that happened, and especially since it's kind of showing up in a variety of trees throughout your entire neighborhood.
Yeah, we did have a cold snap. There's right. no question about that.
So that would be my guess on what happened. And it takes a tree some time to recover. And then, like I said, that's why I want you to wait for, you know, a couple months and before you take any kind of pruning action at all.
Okay. And no fertilizer or anything would help in this situation?
What you might, no, probably not. No fertilizer, definitely. That's not going to help. It's like when we're not feeling well, eating is not necessarily going to make us feel better. So that right. the tree's not feeling well for whatever reason, and feeding it is you could force, you know, sort of like send the thing downhill even more.
All righty. Well, thank you, and I enjoy your program.
Well, thanks.
All right. Bye-bye now.
See ya.
All right, Mike, let's head out to St. Charles, Missouri, and talk to Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Hey there.
Hi.
How you doing?
Very good.
Great. We are having an issue with a dollar spot in our yard and wanted to know how you treat that.
Boy, that's a, you know, that's a tough one. That's a, basically, I would head to my your favorite garden center and tell them you've got dollar spot, and they're going to have specific fungicides that you're going to go after the dollar spot with.
Okay, and is there any way to prevent that in next year? It just kind of started like last week.
And you're pretty sure it's dollar spot? It's not some, you don't have a female dog or anything like that?
No, it is dollar spot. We do have a professional fertilization company come out, and he did, you know, say it's dollar spot.
Okay. So if that's the case, then preventative-wise, you know, there's not really too much you can do. You know, whatever the scenario was that brought the dollar spot fungus into your yard and it hadn't been there before, it can come in on the feet of, you know, wildlife, animals, on people, on mowers. If they cut, you know, somebody else's yard and, you know, professional mowing companies and they come to your yard, they can bring it in that way. There's all kinds of different ways that these can be spread around.
Okay, so there is treatment. Just go to the hardware store and
right.
ask for some stuff.
Great. I'd probably, yeah, hardware store or a year-round garden center would probably be the best. Or True Value, or not True Value. Yeah, Ace Hardware, True Value, those kind of stores that have really extensive amounts of garden center type stuff would be the place to go.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
Yep. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Let's go Blues!
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go. But if you have any questions or concerns or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head to Afton and see what's going on in Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
God, I have two questions, I think, quick. One is about triclopyr. I'm not sure how you say that, for killing violets. On the container, it says not to use it on zoysia. I went online, and it said it's okay for zoysia. What do you think?
I would say the company, the label that's on the product, that's what I would go by more so than anything else.
Okay. It said to be careful. It didn't say to not use it. So
right.
Use it weaker, maybe?
I don't know if weaker is going to actually work. Probably just, you know, don't overdo it. So, in other words, if it says, you know, 1/2 cup per gallon of water, whatever the measurement is, don't let's say, well, these violets are driving me nuts, so I might just double it. So putting it halfway, what you could do is just try it, you know, and see what happens on just a small section and kind of let that be the leading factor.
Okay. And you probably have to spray more than once, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. Violets are brutal. They are probably the most ferocious weed that we have in this entire region.
Okay. Is it okay to do it now? Because somewhere it said wait till fall.
I would say, to me, I like to go after stuff when it's when they're first sort of like growing, and this is when the violets are really starting, because the waxy cuticle, you know, the covering that they actually produce on their own to help them withstand heat, sun, and all that other stuff gets thicker and thicker and thicker as the season goes on. So I would say okay. Now's probably the better time to go after it.
All right. Thank you. Question two, if I've used a weed and grass killer in the vegetable garden to get rid of a whole bunch of weeds, how long do you need to wait?
Probably depends upon the product, but I would say you're probably fairly safe, you know, probably 2 weeks or something like that. But again, always read the label with these kind of things because it's crucial because some of them, you know, you might have to wait a little bit longer. Some of them you might have to not wait at all.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Have a good one.
Certainly.
And Mike, let's head out to Kirkwood and into Vivian's yard.
Hi, Vivian.
Hi, Mike. The question I have is I have a large oak tree in my front yard next to the driveway, and it's causing my driveway to buckle a little.
Ooh.
Now, I know. If I have, let's say, it's asphalt. So if I have my driveway redone, would that kill my tree?
It all depends on how far down they have to dig. And, I mean, they're going to do some damage to the roots. There's no getting around it. And some trees can take, you know, some root damage. Other trees, you know, with very little impact, other trees could be impacted. It just depends upon the individual tree, the individual circumstance, and everything else. So it's sort of a roll of the dice, to be honest.
Okay, and then second question is I had a dogwood that was very, very old in my front yard, and I had it taken down, and I want to replace it, but I want, of course, a small tree. What would you suggest? And my house faces north.
So you don't want another dogwood?
Well, I guess I could, but I was just trying to think of another tree maybe.
Let's see. There's a tree called a fringe tree. You might look at that.
Okay.
Take a look at that. There's a tree called serviceberry, which is native to Missouri. It blooms before the dogwoods, has a smaller flower, produces great fall color as far as the foliage, and also small, like cherry-like fruits. So serviceberry, that would probably be the one I would pick more so than anything else.
A serviceberry.
Right.
Well, and thank you very much.
Yeah, get the tree form. Don't get the shrub form.
I understand.
Okay.
Thank you, and thanks again.
Well, thank you.
And Mike, we're going to head north to Florissant and into Lisa's yard.
Hi, Lisa.
Yes. Hi, Mike. I have a couple questions. I've got multiple flower beds, and I have a lot of weeds. What's the best way to remove the weeds?
This time, you know, I'm sure there are all kinds of different weeds. The best way to do it would have been put a pre-emergent before the new growth began on let's say the plants that are in the bed spaces. And that pre-emergent would be a product called Preen. But now you're going to have to selectively go out and, you know, more or less either be very, very careful and spray like a broadleaf weed killer, like a Weed Be Gone, and take a protecting, you know, piece of cardboard or something so it doesn't drift onto the other plants. Now,
correct.
If these are grassy,
plants in the bed. Mm-hmm.
If they're grassy type weeds, then you can get just a grass killer because it won't hurt, you know, broadleaf plants.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. That makes sense. And my other question is, hanging baskets of myself and a lot of people that I work with, we're having problems with birds putting nests in our hanging baskets. What's the best way to get rid of that or stop that?
Yeah, that's they're nice and soft and they're great. I would probably, you know, the three wires that the hanging basket hangs from, I would probably just wrap some, you know, some like fishing line around that wire.
Okay.
That way, you won't have to see it. It won't disrupt how your plants look. But if the bird lands there, it's going to, like, you know, run into the fishing line and go, what's this? And then finally go away and go over to your neighbors or something.
Okay, makes perfect sense. One more question. I know you're super busy. I had my pin oak taken down about 2 years ago. I had the galls really bad. Mm-hmm. I had about a 60-year-old pin oak. So I had the stump. Just a couple weeks ago, I had the stump removed. What do I do with that mulch?
It's pretty useless because it's really raw wood. And so okay. consequently, if you would like even use it as a mulch on top of the ground, what it can do is bind up nutrients on the surface. It can absorb water and then prevent the water from getting down to the root system of the plants that you're putting it around. So okay. the best thing to do would be to pile it up and let it more or less compost on its own and probably do that for a full year before you spread it around over other plant material.
Okay, perfect. All right, thank you so much, and I appreciate your show.
Well, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Mike, and let's go to Fenton and talk to Carol.
Hi, Carol.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, yes, I was calling in regard to the man who wanted to paint pots. Several years ago, many years ago, probably 10 or more, I painted a clay pot with craft acrylic paint. They comes in regular, I think, or outdoor, like you get at Michael's, and it's perfectly fine. I bring the pot in, though, during the winter time. Don't leave it exposed. But otherwise, the paint adheres very well.
Well, great. That's perfect.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. Thanks for the help. That's what this show is about. It's a roundtable discussion. So if anybody's had success with something, to share it with other people, that's perfect. Break time. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. This is break time.
Get ready for a sports Saturday on KMOX. First up, the Cards and Pirates. Ameren Total Access 1220. First pitch 1:15. Then, game one of the Western Conference Final. The Blues, the Sharks. Pre-game 6:30. The puck drops at 7. It's a Cards and Blues Saturday on KMOX. This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Heading to Shrewsbury, and we're going into John's yard. Hi, John.
Yes, hello, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Hey, so I planted a lot of grass seed, and it's come up, but for that reason, I didn't put any pre-emergent down. So when's a good time to introduce some of that, pre-emergent to take care of the weeds?
Basically, it's too late for the ones, the warm season ones, because they've already germinated. The cool season ones are going to be dying. So there's no reason to probably put any kind of pre-emergent down for the most part until we get into like mid-August or so. And then that will take care of all the cool season weeds.
Yes. Perfect. Thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate
all right.
it.
Yeah. And cool season weeds include henbit. They include chickweed, annual bluegrass, prickly lettuce, Persian speedwell, those type things. Now, the warm season weeds, which have already germinated, that would be where the ones that you'd put the pre-emergent down, like when the forsythia is in bloom. That would be carpetweed, crabgrass, barnyard grass, foxtail, some of the violets, young violets that are just coming up from seed, that type thing.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. And now let's go to...
We're going to Crevecoeur and into Mary's yard.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. I'm calling about our redbud tree. It's a 13-year-old forest pansy.
Ooh.
And it had tons of flowers in April. It was beautiful, covered with purple flowers. But now it's having trouble leafing out. It's only leafing out on the very ends of the branches. Could that be, like, weather-related or... Is the tree getting too old?
It's not old by any means. Forest pansy is, is that the one that has the purplish leaves?
Yes.
Yeah. See, that's a hybrid, and it may be, it may be an age factor related to that. But also, red buds just in general have a tendency to have a very open, let's say, from the trunk outward habit with very little foliage along there. They can have flowers along those, branches. But they don't seem to have foliage over it. So, in other words, it's never going to really look full. Now, this year may be more dramatic for whatever reason, but I would say don't do anything, leave it alone, and just kind of see what happens through the entire growing season.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Certainly.
And now let's head out to Baldwin and into Helen's yard.
Hi, Helen.
Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, I heard you talk earlier about a dove's nest, and I'm wondering if that's what's building in my motion light above the garage door. It's a big, sloppy lot of mud and long, dried ornamental grasses hanging down I tore it down twice. I haven't seen the bird, but could that be is that how your dove nest is?
No, the dove's nest is probably the size of maybe a extra large orange. I mean, that would be the part they sit in. And then the nest doesn't go any further than that. And they seem to use a lot of twigs. They don't use any kind of mud or grasses or anything along that line.
Oh, I don't know what this could be then. I haven't seen the bird. Anyway, I keep tearing it down. Well, thank you.
Certainly. Whatever bird it is, it really likes your place. So.
I've never had one like that before.
Yeah, sloppy and grassy and everything else. That doesn't sound all that pleasant.
No, it was a mess, really. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks.
Certainly.
Enjoy your show.
Well, thank you.
All right, we're going to cross the river into Fairview Heights, Illinois, and talk to Barb.
Hi, Barb.
Well, good morning. I have this was a solution for me. The lady that called in and said that she was having birds nesting in her hanging baskets. I purchased small rubber snakes. And I just kind of coiled them up, put them inside the basket, and the birds never came back. I also had a bird, well, several times, trying to nest above the ledge of my front door. It happened one year, and I got all the, I didn't do anything to the nest after the eggs were laid. But, I had such a mess on my front door from the, droppings from
right.
the birds. But what I do is I put a little rubber snake up there, and the bird just, it sees it, kind of flutters, and flies away. And I never have a problem with birds. Now, I do have to warn my guests whenever we go out on the deck that
those aren't real.
Like a little coiled snake, but it's a rubber snake. So
right.
I would, warn your guests before going out on your, especially if the hanging baskets are in an area where you take your guests to.
Right.
So, but anyway, it has worked for me.
Well, perfect. Thanks. Thanks for the insight. Would have never thought of that. So it shows you your birds are really susceptible to crazy things. So anyway, thanks.
All right. And let's head out to West County and talk to Jan.
Hello, Jan. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Mike. I love your show. And I have a question about a hibiscus. I bought a small one that was almost dead last year at the end of the season. And all the tag said was that it was a hibiscus. It said nothing about its ultimate height or anything about its care. I wondered if, and I nursed it back, and it's very, very misshapen. But I wondered if, and it's blooming and it looks healthy as can be, but can it be planted in the ground and then brought out in the fall? And also, should it be pruned? And I have a couple of other questions.
Yeah, you can prune them, but basically I would not plant it in the ground. I'd leave it in a pot. If you have a place in the ground that you want to put it in a bed space, just dig a hole and set the pot down in there. Don't plant it into the ground.
Should it be potted in a bigger pot?
It's a little tough to tell if it's how big is it and how large is a pot? Can you just
it's about 15 inches tall.
15 inches tall, then no. Definitely it does not want to have a bigger pot.
Okay. Next question. I have a little tiny Venus flytrap. So fascinating. And should it be repotted, though? And also, what about fertilizing it?
Basically, you don't need to fertilize, and no repotting either.
And a small orchid that's in about a 1.5-inch pot. Should it be repotted, and how often should it be watered?
Watered, basically, some people will just put an ice cube every few days on it, let the ice cube melt. But definitely don't repot. Leave everything in small pots as small as possible. They'll kind of let you know. The orchid probably is sending root systems out over the over the top of the bark, or if it's one that's in soil. But that's fine. They don't mind that, and that's best thing for them is to keep them in smaller pots.
Okay. And then lastly, I have had, sadly, a huge pin oak that was taken down that had died. And how soon after the stump is removed may I plant another tree there? And how close to the original stump spot?
Probably 10 or 15 feet away, and I would wait for probably 1 or 2 years at least.
Okay. Many, many thanks.
Well, thank you. And thanks to everybody for calling in. Again, the weeds are just prolific all over the place. So just remember, these are warm season weeds that germinated when the forsythia was in bloom. So yes, you can go after them with a broadleaf weed killer, but pre-emergence this time of year won't do a bit of good for pretty much anything. So I can't tell if it's still raining or not, but Mike Miller, KM Morris Garden Hotline, I will see you after the news.
Let's go Blues!
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Celebrating 25 years as your host of the Garden Hotline. Here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour. And I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly. But right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, your questions, your concerns or comments or experiences you've had in relationship to calls, you know, questions that you have heard on air today or in the past. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show. We're here to discuss plant selection, cares, ups and downs, and all arounds of annuals, bulbs, you know, your spring flowering bulbs. Once that foliage starts turning brown, you can pretty much cut the foliage off, and then you can get your summer bulbs, your elephant ears, your cannas, your caladiums, and stuff like that. They certainly could have been planted already. If you haven't planted them, you can do it now. Your ground covers, your vegetables, your herbs, houseplants, lawn, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I like sharing my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path that you can take. There are plenty of others as well. But strictly, my thoughts are just offered to help you, says maybe make your decision a little bit better. Across the big board is Greg Harvey. He's producing today. So during the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. If you'd like for me to come to your home and do a walk and talk, and we can assess aesthetics, problem solving, plants, whatever it happens to be. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email and my phone number is listed. So we can get together and I'll share 40 plus years of experience in the outdoors. Actually, way more than that because I played in the outdoors as a kid growing up in Ellisville. It can relate to your landscape design. What's going on with these plants, what's happening here, or anything else. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for an individual group or a situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Well, celebration, 30th anniversary of St. Louis Earth Day Festival. Yes, that's already passed, but St. Louis Earth Day Festival founders and board and young friends are inviting you to help do some tree planting. And the tree planting is going to be 30 trees that are going to be planted in historic O'Fallon Park. And tools are going to be provided by Brightside St. Louis. The trees are donated by Forest Keeling Nursery in Ellsbury. Volunteer teams will be provided with tools and easy instructions with demonstrations to plant the trees as marked within the area. And it's kind of surrounding pavilion number one. So bring your garden gloves if needed. And this is going to be on May 25th, so a couple weeks from now. So if you'd like to help celebrate 30 years of Earth Day Festival, why not plant some trees in O'Fallon Park? Also, tip of the trowel goes out to the National Garden Club, and they're headquartered here in St. Louis, and it's one of the nation's most recognized not-for-profit, largest volunteer gardening organizations in the world. And what they do is give an annual award for excellence. And this year's annual award for excellence is Patrick McMillan, and he's a naturalist, an author, educator, Emmy Award-winning host of a popular series on natural world and public television. And also Jim Gibbs, creator of Gibbs Garden, one of the nation's largest residential estate gardens that's open to the public. And as I said before, the National Garden Club, they share part of the grounds at the Missouri Botanical Garden. And it's quite the organization, and This award recognizes exceptional individuals, organizations, or institutions that have made significant contributions to their communities in the environment and civic responsibility, conservation, and community beautification. So it's really nice to, for these, you know, for this organization just to make sure that the people that they choose are really worthy of the award. So again, the National Garden Clubs are located on the grounds of the Missouri Botanical Garden. See if we can get a call in before we take a break.
Yeah, let's head to Chesterfield and talk to Vicki.
Hi, Vicki.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I was wondering, I have a dogwood, a Coosa dogwood that bloomed just beautifully. And next to it, about a little bit away from it, is a 14-inch tall guest and an 8-inch tall guest. And I was wondering, can I transplant those?
Now, what are the plants that are close to your Coosa dogwood?
There are Coosa dogwoods also.
Oh, they're so.
They. I guess I don't know how they got there, but I mean, because the seeds are not red yet or anything, you know.
Right. Well, they have to be from a couple years ago. I would say I would not do it this time of year. I'd probably wait and do it next year and do it sometime between, let's say, Valentine's Day and the Ides of March, mid-March, or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you definitely don't want to do it going into wintertime because they may not get the root systems established enough to be able, in case we have a severe winter. But coming in, you know, coming in, out of wintertime and going into spring, yes, the ground is cold. Sometimes that makes it difficult for plants to get themselves established because of cold ground. But then it's looking at warmer weather coming up instead of the potential for harsh weather.
Right. Okay.
Or you could just leave them where they are. You could just have a small grove.
Oh, you think?
Sure. That's what I would do personally.
Oh, they wouldn't crowd out each other?
No, I mean, some of the branches might, but it still could really create a nice, huge impact.
Oh, well, hey, that's a better idea, then. It sounds easier, too.
Absolutely.
could I ask another question? You have
sure.
Time? Okay. They said that the fiddle leaf fig, you have to layer it in order to, you know, have it to grow again. Well, I've got this enormous fiddle leaf fig, but why can't I just snap off one of the leaves and put it in some of that, you know, that white stuff that makes things grow,
right,
and put it in some dirt and do that without, I don't know what layering is.
Layering is like where you would actually make a cut and then you'd put the grow, you know, the hormone to make it root. But you'd wrap it with like peat moss, that type of stuff, or some of the moss, and put a plastic bag around it. And then once you start seeing the roots come out from the cutting where you've made the cut, that's when you could cut that off and, you know, replant it. But what you're talking about, there's not enough information genetic-wise, and an individual leaf cannot build a root system. So you have to have some woody aspects to make any kind of cutting at all.
I see. Okay. Well, I thank you.
Sure. And, yeah, the rooting hormone is great, but you've got a nice tree, and, individual leaf is not going to do that much good. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. We'll be back after these messages.
Mornings and afternoons, KMOX has news at the top and bottom of the hour, traffic and weather every 10 minutes, and sports at 15 and 45 on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Some of the bugs to be watching out for, the eastern tent caterpillar, they're the ones in forks of branches that have this extensive, like, system of all this webbing and everything else. And what they do is they do that webbing so they can certainly go out and eat leaves and stuff like that. But that webbing protects them so the birds can't get to them. So that's the whole concept behind that. Also, you might start seeing the red spider mites, or red clover mites, I'm sorry. And they are mites. So what they don't do a whole lot of damage to plant material, but they could be all over your picnic tables, all over the, you know, chairs, all over everything. If you see a bunch of little tiny red things scampering all over the place, squash one of them. If it smears red, then it is a red clover mite. Regular insecticide will not kill them. You have to get a miticide to kill them if you want to get rid of them. So, and the pine sawflies, oh, last year we had pine sawflies on our mugel pine, which is right outside our kitchen window. I was shocked at how much they could eat and how quick and how many candles they were on. But this year, I guess because I went out and I got rid of them, they didn't come back. So thank goodness for that. So those three, and there's obviously more insects out there. Slugs and snails start to show that streaky stuff all over the place. Slug and snail bait, or some people like to put a bowl of, you know, or a pie pan of beer out there and attract them and then kill them once they get into that. So let's go to Oakville and Linda. Hi, Linda. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. I am a member of the Oakville Garden Club, and we had an expert from the Missouri Botanical Garden come speak to our club last month, and she was speaking about orchids. And I looked up in their botanical website, Missouri Botanical website, and she actually has an article written in here, Top 10 Orchids for the Home, which is really interesting for people that grow them. I don't happen to grow them, but anyway, I hate to really correct you, but she made us even repeat, because orchids are tropical, she said never, and she made us repeat it, use ice cubes. It says in here for your specific orchid how to water it, but most of them say like tepid water, which isn't even cold water.
Right.
It you know, it repeats that over and over again. Don't put, you know, ice cubes in orchid plants to grow them. And it is real specific to the type of orchid people are growing, of how to care for them, like the food and all that. So I thought that might be very helpful for, you know, people who do grow them. Then I have another question. I got a coneflower, an orange and yellow coneflower start from a garden, and along with that came this weed that is so invasive and it's driving me nuts. It's probably about a one-inch leaf, kind of, you know, flat but roughly kind of leaf, and then in the spring, along the vine, it vines out and just attaches to the ground and just spreads everywhere. It has a little purple flower. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of decorative. But is there any way other than just pulling it? It's gone all over the garden. And the flower died. The cone flower never made it, but the weed survived. So is there, I don't really want to use Roundup, but is there a way, you know, to get rid of this weed other than just constantly pulling it? Because when I go out to the garden, I can pull so much of it every time I go out there. It's crazy.
Basically, what you can do is just get like kind of a Weed Be Gone type product and just and paint it right onto the foliage of the weed that you're trying to get rid of.
Oh, okay.
And that way, that'll take
care
of it.
Do I have to crush anything?
Yeah, I always like to crush stuff, because that just opens up wounds and it, you know, helps the herbicide suck in a little bit more.
So we have one, we have a full-strength Weed Be Gone that you mix in, you know, with a pump sprayer.
Right.
Should I just kind of paint that on full strength?
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't have any problem doing it. So you're just painting it right onto the plant you're trying to get rid of.
How much of it, like, you know, if I got a vine going along a foot or so, should I paint it on, like, every leaf?
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to do every leaf. Find out, you know, but you're saying if the stem is rooting, you know, extensively. So, in other words, each individual leaf, even though all the ones in front of it and back of it have been killed, that one leaf that wasn't, let's say, doctored with the herbicide could actually start growing on its own. So my tendency would be to, I know it's going to be painful and everything else, but just fool around with it and see what you think and see how well it's working as far as doing that.
Okay, great. And I hope it works. Otherwise, I'll go nuts.
And in relationship to the orchids, I completely agree with that. It's just over the years, there's been several people that have called, and actually there's some kind of company or something that says, you know, that's the advice they give, and that's why I threw that out. I grow orchids myself. I would never put ice cubes on my orchids, but I was offering it to this, you know, this lady as an option, because, you know, people have called in after I've said, you know, just use the water, you got the bark, let it run through everything else, and they said that companies like, I forget what it's called, but they specifically say to use ice cubes, but I could never really figure out the logic of that. But I just, the lady, you know, I just thought maybe that would offer her a little bit of an option.
Oh, well, this lady who came to our house has 300 orchids, and she helps take care. She said she helps take care of the 6,000.
Right.
They're at the botanical garden.
Yeah, they don't put. Yeah, they don't put ice cubes on anything.
No.
But thanks for calling.
Maybe the company that. Maybe the company that recommended the ice cube wants it to die, so you have to buy another one from them.
That could be the case, yes.
Okay, have a great day.
Yeah,
love
thanks.
The show. Love our show.
Well, thank
Bye.
You, and thanks for calling in. You know, because I should have said ice cubes is, you know, an option that callers over the years have, you know, mentioned on air. But the orchids I grow, I don't put ice cubes on them. So.
All right, we're going to head to Muskuta, Illinois, and into Denise's yard.
Denise, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I am calling to, I've been doing some research, and we have that red lava rock around our house.
Mm-hmm.
What would you suggest is the easiest way for removing that?
Ooh, there is no easy way. First of all, there's probably landscape fabric underneath it. Now, what you could do is have sheets of plastic on the edge of the bed where, you know, this is, and just... Where, you know, on the inside, let's say it's up, butts up next to your house, get a hold of the landscape fabric and just start rolling it, and then roll it out of the bed space onto this sheet of plastic.
Okay.
That would probably, I mean, it's going to be a lot of work, but there's no easy way to get rid of, you know, any kind of rock mulch. And it's going to be work.
Okay. Alrighty, that's what I was doing some research, seeing if they had like little vacuums and all that stuff, and I even thought of a shop vac. So.
I think that would be disastrous.
Yeah, kind of that's what I'm learning. All right, well, thank you very much.
Certainly.
All right, and let's talk to Keith. He's in Wentzville, Missouri.
Hi, Keith.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay, there you are. My brother has a tulip tree that's 5 years old, give or take a year,
mm-hmm.
about 10 feet tall, and it's got sentimental value to him. But he told me the other day he was thinking about topping it, and I didn't ask him why, but I told him to hold off until I asked you because I thought I heard you say something about negatively affecting a tree because of hormones that the top of the tree produces, or am I dreaming?
Well, that's not... You know, if you start topping something, it's just not good overall. But this tree is fairly small, so he could top it. But a tulip tree, if this is the classic tulip tree, this thing is going to end up being 50 to 60 feet high with about a 50 to 60 foot spread.
So, yeah, I know. I've got two of them on right alongside of my house. That's where this came from.
Oh,
it was a volunteer. Yeah.
And so, I mean, it is just topping it. I don't know why he wants to top a 10-foot one. It's just, you know... I would say leave as much foliage as you possibly can while it's still fairly young, which this one is, because nutrients and moisture come up from the root system. They go up to the leaf, and then the leaf uses sunlight to make chlorophyll, which is food, and keeps the tree healthy. So I would say topping is not, I don't know the advantage of doing that.
Okay, well, that's kind of what I was wanting. Like I said, I didn't even ask him why he wanted to do it. But,
right.
Told him to hold off, and we'll see what the expert knows.
Yeah, I would say don't do it.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Happy Mother's Day.
Same to you. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Let's go Blues!
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
We're headed out to St. Charles, and we're going into Dave's yard. Hi, Dave. Hello, Dave. Are you there?
Yes, I'm the brownest thumb you've ever talked to, and I've listened to you for over 20 years and never called in. However, if it doesn't take care of itself, I don't have it in my yard. But I do have zoysia grass, and it was put in by somebody else years and years and years ago. Now, it's done pretty well, and I put weed killer on it, though, every other year, and like run this stuff to get the... it has spikes like every other year or something
right.
like that. But now it looked all right, except the minute it started raining, 2 weeks ago or whenever, the weeds started to come.
Right.
And my question is, I generally have put on a, something you put on the hose and you just spray it. with the water. Now, how long do I have to wait? How dry does it have to be before I put that on? You know, they say if you put it on when it's raining, it's going to wash right off.
Absolutely. You got to basically, after, I'm assuming you're talking about a broadleaf weed killer, you have to at least have it on the plant material, you know, dry blades for an hour before another rain, let's say, sequence would happen. And it'd be better if it was 6 hours, but they all on the label say, you know, they start being effective after an hour and rain will not, let's say, diminish the effectiveness.
I thought it was 2 days you had to wait.
No. It's multiple hours, but at least 1 day would be ideal. 6 hours would be the minimum to me. 1 hour, I think, is a little bit iffy. But, these companies, they do extensive tests on it. It's just, I'm a little bit, queasy about just an hour.
Now, is it better if I cut it before I do this? And if I would cut it, how long should I wait after that?
Basically, if you cut it, you might, get rid of some of the foliage of the weeds that you're trying to kill. And if, there's not as much foliage there, then the foliage has to be where the weed killer goes to.
Well, you can see how much I know, but I thought maybe if you cut it, it would go into the cut part.
Well, if it was full mature plants and everything else, I always tell people to step on it and crush it and things like that. But if you're reducing the amount of leaves, then that's not good.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. And your philosophy is very similar to my father's. We grew up, as I constantly say, we lived down by the botanical garden until I was 6 years old and 55. Then we moved out to Ellisville. And his philosophy was, if it's green, it's good. So that was, so he didn't care. All right, thanks.
All right, let's head out to Ellisville and talk to Tom.
Whoa, what a coincidence. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Hi.
I've got a new fescue sod on top of your Ellisville rock, and I do compost in the fall after aeration. I remember last week someone had called in about various better times to fertilize different types of grass. Better time to fertilize Bermuda versus bluegrass,
right,
versus fescue. So what are the best times of year to fertilize fescue?
Fescue, basically, you can get one application in this month during May while it's still cool. And then you don't do any kind of fertilizing through the entire summertime, with the next application in September. Then you go October and November and then possibly December. So one application in May, but the main fertilizing for cool season grasses, which bluegrasses and fescues are, is in the fall.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Oh, and if you have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. So we've still got several minutes if you'd like to, talk about whatever it happens to be in your landscape. So other things that you need to be thinking about just kind of in general is your mulch. Don't get your mulch too deep. I know we all, too often, we're putting mulch on our plant material because we like how it looks. But mulch is very specific for the plant material. And if it gets too deep, it can cause problems. And if we pile it up on trunks of trees, it could cause problems. So just watch out. Around trees and shrubs, 3 to 4 inches is the maximum. And around perennials and annuals and that type thing, even ground covers, 1 to 2 inches.
All right, let's head out to Wentzville and talk to Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Oops.
Oh, Sam, are you there?
We got him now.
Yeah, I'm here. How are you doing this morning?
Very good.
We've got about 2 flower beds in the front of our house. We just moved in about a year ago, and they had them mulched over and had some things in there that had died by the time we moved in. And so we raked up the mulch to put some new mulch in there, and we found out that the soil in there is pretty rocky. And we are not sure what kind of perennials or anything to put in there that's going to survive that soil. Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, I would say there are, some perennials, specifically, I would say go to the Missouri Botanical Garden site and see which ones they recommend. But plants like yarrow and some of the ornamental grasses, they like a Rockies type soil. But what you can do is just get the St. Louis Composting raised bed mix and mix it in with the existing soil, even with the rocks, and then you can probably, and I'm pretty sure, that you can grow pretty much any kind of perennial you want to.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can go to, you know, Pure Air Natives and just check for the, you know, the prairie. They've got all kinds of different plants for very specific type of environments. You can check those, either one of those places out, and have good luck.
Awesome. Thank you. That sounds great. You have all a great day.
Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Get ready for a sports Saturday on KMOX. First up, the Cards and Pirates. Ameren Total Access, 1220. First pitch, 115. Then, Game 1 of the Western Conference Final. The Blues, the Sharks. Pre-game, 630. The puck drops at 7. It's a Cards and Blues Saturday on KMOX. Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we're headed into Crestwood. Ruth, how are you today?
I'm doing well.
Great.
I have a question about my tricolor beech tree.
Okay.
It has some branches. I mean, the whole thing right now is lovely with the salmon-colored small leaves.
Right.
But then there are a couple of branches that have big leaves that are just kind of a dull green with maybe a little bit of dot of color here and there. But I wouldn't want that to overtake the tree. Is that just something reverting back to a, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, basically what it is this is a hybrid, and a lot of times with things that are variegated, many, many different types of plants can start, you know, shooting some stuff out that actually goes back to one of its parents. So just, you know, those individual branches, just cut them, you know, cut them off, remove them. You could anticipate them happening every so often, you know, through the life of the tree, and just leave about a quarter inch stub wherever it's connected to.
Okay, I'll trim it that way then.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, and if the branches are exceptionally long, make sure that you cut them off in sections so your final cut doesn't tear the bark or anything like that. But tricolor beech is one of my favorite trees. You don't see them too often either. But when I was at the botanical garden, there was one that was spectacular, kind of out in the open by itself, and I kind of really fell in love with that particular tree.
Well, mine has been a real survivor. It's been transplanted and just, you know, has really thrived wherever I've had it.
Great. Well, good. That's great.
All right. Now let's head out to High Ridge, and we'll talk to Jim.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Oh, Mike. Fine. I've got three of these blue atlas little pine trees,
mm-hmm.
anywhere from 6 to 10 foot tall.
Right.
And I was wondering what kind of fertilizer you could put on them, because to me they look a little peaked. I don't know what it is.
With blue atlas cedars, any kind of evergreen really likes an acidic soil. So maybe it's not fertilizer it needs. Maybe they just need you to get some iron sulfate and sprinkle it around, let's say, halfway out from the trunk to however wide they are, and water it in really well. And a lot of the evergreens lose that, let's say, acidity in the soil, or it was never there in the first place. And as they age, then, you know, let's say the lack of color, regardless of what type it is, you know, starts to fade away. So I'd probably recommend that more so than, let's say, a fertilizer. So iron sulfate, but then in the wintertime, get an electric drill and auger some holes around the tree and just backfill those holes with compost. I would, by doing that, you're feeding the soil as opposed to, let's say, feeding the tree with fertilizer.
When you say compost, is that a special mix? Or?
No, just, you know, compost, basically, as long as I don't, personally, I don't necessarily, you know, it's just, it's a personal choice, you know, as much as anything. But you don't have to make the compost yourself or anything else, but just, you could get some bag compost and just use that.
Okay. Well, great. I sure appreciate it.
Yeah. But, yeah, the discoloration is what it is the soil pH has gotten too high. And even if there is iron present, that the sulfur will bring the pH down and then make it so the iron is available. But just in case the iron isn't there, it won't hurt anything to get the iron sulfate.
All right. Now let's head over to Illinois and talk to Harold.
How are you, Harold?
I'm good. Thank you, Mike. Looking at some containers for trying to grow kale, beets, and potatoes. We've got some fabric containers and wondering whether potting soil, potting mix, or topsoil would be the ideal ingredient to put in there.
I would say potting's, I would get a blend of topsoil and compost together.
Okay.
And that's, that's just going to give, it's just going to be a better medium for growing the things that you want to.
Okay. Topsoil and compost blended together.
Right.
Okay. We can do that.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's the blend, it just makes a huge, huge difference. There's no, I'm not a plant expert, but I know it makes a difference. So,
all right, we'll stay in Illinois, head to Columbia, and talk to Ed.
Hi, Ed.
Hey, good morning, Mike. This is Ed. I got a question about Japanese maple. I got a Japanese maple that's about 40 years old, and it's just been beautiful. But this year, it seemed like I had to get in there, and there's a lot of real brittle branches and things. When I took them off, they just broke right off. And I just wondered, how long these Japanese maples last, and now that I got holes in them. I got holes. It used to be just really pretty, but now I got like huge holes in them. Thing, will they grow back, or what's your thoughts?
No, they won't grow back. Basically, dead wood on any kind of tree, especially a tree that old, is just something that happens. What it is one particular branch, or twig or whatever it is just, the tree, let's say, disconnects it from the living system. So in other words, from the vines. And that's why the dead branching or dead twigs happen. But any tree will happen, especially trees once they get to that certain age. And usually it starts happening at a much younger age. And no, that those spots won't fill in again. It's always going to sort of, I'm not going to say you're going to end up with more and more dead, dead wood, but you probably will, and it will probably end up with just more of an open habit.
Okay, well, that's kind of bad news, but all right, thank you, sir. I kind of thought that was the case. But
yeah.
I thought that.
That's why a lot of people, with oak trees or maple trees or any other thing, elm trees, ash trees, they have arborists come out and remove the dead wood, so that's just part of the growing process.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
And now, Mike, I think this might be our last phone call. We're headed all the way to Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Ooh.
Talking to Matt.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I am well, Mike. Thank you so much for your show, our show that you host. I've been listening to your show for many, many years.
Really?
I moved out to Wisconsin about 13 years ago. But my question, believe it or not, is about a Japanese maple as well. I actually have a couple questions, but the first one's about the Japanese maple. Up here, we start a little bit later in the year for our growing season.
Sure.
And my Japanese maple, about 14 years old, the buds are coming along slowly, but they haven't leafed out. Is this generally a tree that leafs out a little bit later?
Well, it depends upon exposure. If you've had it that long, is this normally what happens? And I don't know where you are, but there was all kinds of wild, crazy stuff about the snows in the northern states. So, have you had an exceptionally bad, cold, late cold, and all that other stuff?
Yeah, it's been a cold spring, and the buds are getting bigger and bigger, and it's always a little slow, kind of like my pin oak, and just trying to get talked off the ledge because it seems to be going okay, but it's how you built your kind of garden around these things usually.
Sure.
So it's a key part of my garden.
Yeah, it can be nerve wracking when you watch the buds. So I would say it's just a natural process related to the weather, and the tree was smart enough to hold back on those buds. If those buds would have pushed out, and you get this cold, it could have killed all the buds and really set the tree back.
My second quick question was just about a pine tree that I planted in a half barrel several years ago. A daughter brought it home on Arbor Day. It was cold out, so we just put it in this half barrel, and then I never moved it, as I probably should have. And now I've got about a 4-foot pine tree there, pretty close to the patio that I'm going to cut out. How much root should I have to worry about dealing with there if I just cut it off at the base? I think usually pine trees kind of root straight down, don't they?
No, every tree sends lateral roots. The roots that go straight down are strictly stabilizing roots, but all the feeder roots are lateral roots regardless of what type of tree it is.
Okay, so there may be some roots to deal with. And then
right.
My last question, I swear, is I bought a package of grass killer. You can use it supposedly in your garden area, and I've got some irises that have a lot of grass around them. Somebody came in and overseeded for us and then tossed seed up in that area. Is that an okay product to use? Do I have to worry about it damaging my irises or anything like that?
Anything that has a blade somewhat like a grass, like iris does, a grass killer could definitely do some damage to it. So, Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline. See you next week.